it's like a win-win-win, which is my favorite kind of win. Like, this is why I say conversation is the most important part. Word of mouth marketing, conversation, is the strongest form of marketing still to this day, and probably will be for all time. It has been, it is, and I would surmise that it will be. And so you can't have word of mouth marketing without those conversations happening. People have to be talking about you or talking to you.
I'm Rachel Coble.
And I'm Liz Dean.
Welcome to Mock It. This podcast interviews industry experts from AI innovators to UX architects to nonprofit leaders and lots of people in between.
We explore the back of the napkin ideas that impact the nation so you don't have to dig for the discoveries yourself. Enjoy and don't forget to like and subscribe. Today's episode, I'm super stoked. We have a very fun episode for everyone. We talked with Brooke Sellis, who founded B Squared Media in 2012. Her big mantra is think conversation, not campaign.
Yeah, she was amazing to have on. If you've ever wanted to learn a little bit more about social strategy, what it takes to run your own company, or just giggle a little bit, because we did our fair share of that, then please enjoy this episode and don't forget to like and subscribe to see more of us.
I think one of the things that really pulled me in was your immediate, on your LinkedIn, your immediate revelation that you were an aspiring weather girl.
That's what I wanted to ask.
I'm sorry, Liz. I told you it was cool. I think that's such a, it's like such a very niche thing to want to be that I feel like that's why it's so easy to grab onto it. But how did you go from that kind of dream to becoming an entrepreneurial and like digital customer experience, social media consultant, owner, CEO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, it's not a linear path. But you know what? I don't know. I just always wanted to be the weather girl. I can't tell you why. Like, people would just say that I had like a bubbly personality and that I would be great for TV. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll just be the weather girl. And yeah, from there, I went to school for communications, which I thought I was following the path of the weather girl. But ultimately, you know, that path led me to entrepreneurship, social media, digital experience consulting. So I think it's kind of the same. Like, that's what I tell myself. I'm like, well, I do a lot of stuff on camera, just not about the weather.
So you've been an entrepreneur for a long time, and like reading about your story, getting to know you a little bit more, you sort of like jumped in before it was cool. Like, you gave up, like, you're like, I'm going to do this. You know, you gave up having like the security of a full-time job, stuff like that. What was your inspiration to do that? And like, what gave you the bravery to do that?
I wish I could be honest and say that I was brave and that I just made the leap and hoping that would appear. But no, my dad and my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, basically pushed me off the cliff and told me I had to do it on my own. So I'm really thankful for those two, because I'm not like a big risk taker most of the time. I'm pretty conservative. So it took some pushing, poking, prodding, pushing off the cliff for me to actually make the leap and do it on my own. And the quick story is, my dad worked at a fintech company at the time. And he was like, hey, I got you a pitch with our CMO for your social media services, but there's one condition. And I said, what? And he was like, if you win the pitch, you have to do it. You have to start a company, and like, this will be your first client. And I was like, okay, you know, thinking like I would never win the pitch. And I did. And like, I can remember literally like going to the dining room table and like starting the paperwork for B Squared after that. It was very surreal.
Oh my gosh. I love that. Also, I was talking to our video person earlier. B Squared, was your maiden last name a B?
It was.
Okay. I was like trying to piece that together from your LinkedIn, because I was like, B Squared, her last name starts with an S, but she's a B. That's probably her maiden name.
Yeah, it was Brooke Ballard, which a lot of people also said like back in the day, oh my God, that's a TV name. Like, this probably played into the weather. But then when I became Brooke Sellis, BS Media didn't have quite the same ring to it. So I just left it as B Squared.
Oh, I love that. I feel like you could have made some pretty cool like merch with BS Media though.
Not BS Media.
Yes. You could have had some cheeky fun with that. but I really like the name. I'm glad I was right. There's your maiden name.
Thank you. Yeah. Brooke Ballard. I mean, it does have a ring to it. Sometimes I miss it, but you know.
I get that. I just changed my last name like a month ago and I'm sad about it.
Yeah. Also the amount of work that it takes to do that.
So I didn't change my name mainly because, well, one, I like my last name, but two, because of everything that goes into your name. It's so much.
It's ridiculous.
Insane. I spent like two and a half hours at the Social Security office last week.
That's right.
2 weeks ago. I don't know. Time is blurred together. And I was texting my husband. I was like, you owe me.
Yeah. Honestly, truly, you should get some sort of like, you know, like some ladies get push presents for having a baby. Yes. You should get like a name present for changing your last name.
I'm totally all for that. When I go to the DMV, he's coming with me. I am not sitting in there by myself.
Make him suffer.
I'm like, we're going out to dinner after.
Like, he should have like a snack basket to bring with you.
Honestly.
Oh, people would love you.
Oh, yeah. You'd make so many friends there.
This got so off topic, but I'm going to do that.
So when you started your company, what was the social media landscape like? Because I feel like there are so many questions I want to ask. I feel like it was such a cool story. And then from there, I will continue to keep grilling
you. One at a time, Liz.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll try to be super quick about it. But essentially, I got interested in social media in 2007. This is when I worked for a nonprofit in Dallas called the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And I was tasked with coming up with a young professionals committee. And through this committee, we were like, what will make people like want to get involved with CF? Because nobody knows what it is, right? It only affects 33,000 Americans. My sister happens to be one of them. So it's not like a disease that a lot of people know about. So we decided beer was the obvious answer. And then I was a tad older than some of my committee members, but they were like, and Facebook, combine beer with Facebook and we can't lose. And so they introduced me to Facebook and there were no pages back then. There was no advertising, right? It was just profiles. And we basically created a profile and treated it like a page, like gave our logo for CF and called the page Generation Cure because we believed that the cure would be found in our generation, like set it up like a page. Long story short, we ended up having 1,700 people sign up for our pub crawl and made $60,000 for our first time event. And we did it in less than 4 months. And so this like idea was planted in my head, like, wait a minute. Like there's a there. Like this isn't just social media. This is like you could make money off of social media. So fast forward a little bit, started my company. And I thought I was just going to be like, here's your amazing social strategy. Go forth and prosper. And I did that with my dad's company. And they came back like, I don't know, 2 weeks later. And they were like, there's no way. We cannot do this. You have to do it for us. So I quickly pivoted from being a social strategy company, which is really I thought people would need because social media was so new and people were just getting used to it. But they were like, no, man, we need you to tell us what to do and then actually do the doing. So I quickly pivoted and we became a done-for-you social media management company.
Oh, that is amazing. I also love that your start was something that was so personal, but also like for charity. That's like heartwarming.
Oh, thank you.
Of course. So our company, we are a government contractor, basically. And so, you know, we see a lot of government accounts and they're on social media and things like that, but sometimes not necessarily the people that we're trying to reach out to, or even the people that like government agencies have social media who are trying to reach out to, are actively on social. Mm-hmm. Have you ever run into a client who's come to you and you're like, you know what, social might not be the best choice for you? Or like, how do you navigate those where you're like, your target audience really isn't on these platforms that everyone now talks about all the time?
Yeah, I think it involves deep research and social listening. So the research part is pretty obvious probably, right? Like you want to find out who is your ideal customer profile. Once you build out that persona or personas, then you need to go research, you know, where do they spend their time online? What's their channel of choice? Is it phone, email? Is it social, right? How do they consume information? And then I would use social listening. So I would take, you know, the name of the agency and any kind of adjacent keywords or keyword phrases, and I would use social listening to see who is talking about those things online. And then if you see that there's really like no chatter happening, even if you did the deep research and you're like, they could be on Facebook, right? But if you see no chatter happening, then it's probably not an ideal place for you to spend your time, money, and energy. We rarely find that. Most of the time, people are talking about you, like the brand, but they're not necessarily tagging you, right? They're like mentioning product names or service names. They're mentioning stakeholders and not the brand. They're not tagging you on purpose because they're bashing you. You know what I mean? So I think it takes deep research to really answer that question, unfortunately.
I love good research.
So then how do you, so I guess I have two questions. Like the first question is, you started your company back around 2007-ish. So a lot has changed with the landscape of social media. One, it kind of blew up. Two, you know, now it's a little bit more than like MySpace and Facebook. It's
oh, a lot. MySpace.
Oh man, I had the best MySpace page. Can I just say?
Oh, that was the first social media account I ever got. And I sneakily got it because I was too young to get it. And my parents did not want me on social media. And I was like, I'm going to create a MySpace.
When you were talking about Facebook, I was like, oh, I'm so old. Because I was like waiting for them to open it up to you to get invited to.
Oh, it's yes. Just college students.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in high school, I was like waiting until I either got like my at college, you know, .edu mm-hmm. or like for them to open it up to like the masses. So yeah, that's really impressive. You knew that it was something back then.
I mean, I would say I stumbled on it. It was luck. The landscape has changed drastically. It's funny that you say that. We just released this week our State of Social Care 2023 report. And even from last year's report, the changes that are happening with digital engagement are bananas, right? So I think the big things that I would say I gleaned from the report is that consumers are really looking at brand conversation in a totally different way. You can call it whatever you want to call it. We say brand conversation, digital engagement. But what we've found is that consumers today are doing more research on social. They're buying more on social. They're asking their peers about the best products and services on social. But they're also looking to brand conversations to make buying decisions. So when they were asked, you know, which do you weight higher, brand conversations or online reviews, they weighted them as high or higher. So online reviews used to be like everybody's, you know, you got to have great online reviews. And I still think that's true. But I think what's becoming even more important than online reviews is brand conversation, because they're looking to see, A, in a passive way, is this brand answering questions in a valuable way for people who ask? What's their tone, their voice? How do they feel? How quickly do they respond? And then actively, they're asking sales questions to brands online. And what they're kind of weighting brands on are, how fast do you respond? The fastest usually wins the business. And how valuable is your answer? And there's a lot of nuance that comes in thirdly, which is like, are you just trying to sell to them right off the bat when they ask that sales question? Or are you looking at intent signals and then selling, right? Because interest doesn't necessarily mean intent.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We just talked about intent in the last episode and how important it is to know what your customers are intending to do with what they're searching or what they're talking about.
Yes.
So that always, I feel like, throws people through a loop. It's like, chatter doesn't mean you're going to make money from the chatter.
Right. So I guess the tip I would give anybody who's listening, the first thing I would do if I were you is I would go tag or label every single conversation I have incoming to my company, my brand online as acquisition or retention. If it is acquisition or retention, meaning is it like that sales support kind of question? Like, does your product do this, or why is it more expensive than your competitor? Or is it retention? You know, hey, I bought your thing and I'm having trouble doing X. Can you help me out? And once you start tagging everything as acquisition and retention, it will be eye-opening for you to see how much of your customer loyalty and your sales sit on social.
Oh, BRB, I'm going to go message our social media person and be like, hey, I've got some tips for you.
Oh, that's so interesting, though, because like when you do chats or something, like, you know, if you're on Verizon or Best Buy or Apple or whatever, and, you know, the chat icon comes up, it's like, are you a current customer? Are you looking for sales? Is something broken? So they're probably taking a page out of your book for that.
They are. Well, and the fun thing there is too, like what I talk about in the State of Social Care 2023 report is AI, right? So what's happening in that chat is they're using artificial intelligence to automatically start to, you know, whittle you down to either which customer you are, which type of customer. It's segmenting you in real time, which obviously humans can't do. Just to get all of that first party data, because as I don't have to tell y'all, you know, with third party cookies going away, first party data is going to be more important than ever. So having those conversations, whether through AI or humans or a combination of both, and gathering that first party data is going to be so critical in the coming years.
Oh, it's a little scary. I don't mind chatbots like when you're collecting that data, like on a website. But I hate I still hate when you call someone and it's like a recording, you have to press buttons and you're saying the same thing over and over and over again.
I'm always like,
they need to figure that out. They're doing really well with the like online
stuff. Smashing the zero button like a crazy person. Yeah. No, I mean, this is why channel of choice is so important, right? Because some people still want to pick up the phone. Some people would rather email. Some people want to go to social. Some people don't mind going to social and talking to a bot, right? You are going to have to get hyper personal with your customer's channel of choice. And by hyper personal, I mean, you're going to want to try to figure out every single customer's channel of choice and then segment them based on that information.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not a data person because that sounds stressful.
It's not, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it's possible.
Wow, this is a great field for data scientists. I know.
Beyond the data and the science that goes behind social media, because it almost is a science, like connecting with people. I mean, it's not almost, it is a science if you're on the strategy side of things. But you wrote a whole book on it. You're kind of even more on the whole brand conversation side of things. So what would you say is more important, building those conversations and connections or really diving deep into the data for like a client that comes to you? Which do you think is like more important to them or to you?
The conversation, it comes first, in my opinion, right? Because what we say in the book is like, you have to have connection first, right? This is based on psychological facts, right? We buy, 95% of why we buy is based on emotion. So you have to get that connection piece first. The second piece is the conversation, because if you're having those conversations with your audience or your customers on social, you are collecting automatically that first party data, whether you're doing it manually or with AI or a combination of both. Only once you have connection and conversation and then the data from the conversation can you get to conversion. Everybody wants to try to go to conversion first, but nobody really looks at connection and conversation. And by the way, connection isn't a follow, a like, a newsletter subscriber. Connection has to be two-way, which is why the conversation piece is so important.
That I really like that because I think it also puts an emphasis on having really well-trained social media people on your team who are good at making those connections, who are actively engaging and not just going on like a HubSpot or something and scheduling out all the posts and then never engaging with the audience. So I feel like that makes social media people feel like their jobs are a little safer.
Yeah, well, their jobs are totally safe. I think they're going to actually become more important because of the whole first party data thing. But the other piece of advice I would give, which is going to be hard for a lot of people to swallow, I get it. Stop building a follower base and start building a customer base. Mm. It's really that simple. It's not about the numbers. If you build a customer base, those are the only people who are really going to care about your content anyway or having those conversations with you. So start building a base of your ideal customer profiles. And who cares if you have 5 or 5 million followers as long as they're made up of customers and would-be customers.
So I'm kind of laughing as you're saying this because not to get on the Taylor Swift bandwagon, but we should. So there is a lot of talk about her reputation tour coming out and when is she going to drop it? Her Taylor Taylor's version, her TV version, for those who are not Swifties.
Everyone is a Swiftie.
So, but on social media, just like you were saying, like cultivating this like two-way relationship, everyone is trying to speculate. And like, I'll just preface this, like, I'm a Swiftie by marriage, but now that I have gone to two of her her concerts, I'm like, ah, Swiftie, she's so good.
It's easy to drink the Kool-Aid when it comes to her.
Oh, yeah, I'm all in. So now all of these things are popping up on my social media of these fan people being like, oh, I think this is when she's going to drop, or this is when she's going to drop. And then they're kind of like, or they could be clowning us. And it's like this whole like relationship of her Easter eggs, but then people are excited by it. And then like there's podcasts about it. There's this whole like life around it.
100%. Like, this is why I say conversation is the most important part. Word of mouth marketing conversation is the strongest form of marketing still to this day, and probably will be for all time. It has been, it is, and I would surmise that it will be. And so you can't have word of mouth marketing without those conversations happening. People have to be talking about you or talking to you.
So talking about you or to you, do you still believe in the all press is good press though? Like all social is good social? Or are you like, oh,
no,
me neither.
Unfortunately, I mean, as anyone who's, you know, been on the front line of being the social agent for, I mean, we've seen it ourselves. We probably maybe have even engaged in some of that backlash, but it's so difficult to maintain a healthy balance of, you know, being into the conversations, soliciting those conversations, talking about opinions and feelings. But then also there's like the mental health side of it, right? Because we have all of these people are angrier than ever. The first place they go to rant is social because they want an audience. It's a spectator sport. And, you know, no, I don't think every social media is good social media, but I do think if you have this kind of like social care mantra or a social care program in place, you can start to see where those little things might bubble up and try to, you know, fix the problem or re-steer the conversation in another direction before it becomes like a full-blown crisis.
Oh, that I like really like that you said social care. Is that how you tackle like a social calm crisis plan? Is like, what does that look like for, do you make a new one for each client based on what they're doing, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So we call it social care, which apparently in the UK means like government care. The full term is a social media customer service, but we like social care because A, it doesn't sound so transactional. And B, it's not just about, you know, it's misleading when you hear customer service because you're only thinking about retention. And part of what we're helping our clients do is that acquisition portion based on that acquisition tagging that I was telling you about. So like for a quick example, let's say you have a channel that has like 20% acquisition happening on that channel, social channel, month after month. If we know let's say if you're a product brand, we know the MSRP behind the product, or you're a service brand and we know the customer lifetime value, we can start to monetize. Right? We can start to say, hey, 20% of the chatter that happened and looking at these unique conversations is equal to $500,000 in potential closed business. Now, how do we go out and close that business based on some of those intent signals that we've seen? So we're caring for the customer, we're caring for the would-be customer, and we're also caring for the brand because we're retaining customers and we're acquiring new customers. So it's like a win-win-win, which is my favorite kind of win.
Do you have advice for, okay, so Delta a few months ago changed their point system.
Oh boy. That is not the story I thought you were going to go with for a second, but I'm so glad it is because I don't know if we could air the one I was thinking of.
Oh. Airlines not doing so hot out there.
No. They basically changed their whole customer point system, and it was like intense backlash on.
Mm-hmm.
It was
so bad for social people. God,
yeah, truly, social media was like blowing up. People were tagging them. People were, as you were, you know, it was spectator support. I was just like watching, being like, "Oh, who's gonna tag them next?"
With a bag of popcorn, yeah.
With the social care, as we were just talking about. You know, they sort of backtracked. They were like, oh, well, we'll revise some of the initiatives that we were going forth with because it was just very intense. Is that something that happens often, or is this just sort of a one-off case because they're such a large organization?
No, this happens all the time, even with smaller, much smaller brands. I find that, you know, the companies who aren't truly customer centric have a hard time with social care, right? Because what happens is they didn't go to their community of loyal customers and kind of do like a focus group, even on social, just like kind of like saying, hey, how would you feel, right? Soliciting those opinions and feelings if we change this part of the program to this. They would have seen a lot of negative comments on that post. And that's like a focus group. And it didn't cost you $1 million. And you got, you know, viewpoints from all over the globe. That's the cool thing about social. And they could have gone back to the powers that be and said, like, hey, this received, you can use social listening for this. Like 86% of the conversations or the comments that we got were negative. So if we put this out, if we change this, prepare yourself, you know, and even if they wanted to go forward, then you have a crisis plan, hopefully in place, you know, so that you have something to answer with. But backtracking like they did, because they didn't do the research in the beginning, is never, you never want to be on your back foot on social because it's such an ugly place.
Yeah. And just embarrassed. Like I just feel like probably everyone involved was like, oh, I'm about to have the worst month of my life.
Truly. And the poor social people, you know, the people on the front line
who aren't making those decisions, but then have to deal with it.
Get berated and called things. And oh, it's awful. It's really awful. So yeah, just, you know, if you're upset, I get it. You are allowed to be upset and to go to social and say something, but just try to remember that the person that you're talking to on the other side of that screen had nothing to do with whatever it is you're upset with. They're trying to help.
Speaking of that, how do you feel? Because I feel like this is a really common comment now on socials that's doing well and social that is getting backlash is when people immediately say, oh, like, go get your social intern. Like, they're calling everyone on social team like an intern. Does that just like aggravate you?
Yeah. To let my Southern show, it really chaps my hide. But yeah, I think, you know, social care people are really, in my mind, a specialized role. At least that's what we do. Because you can't necessarily sit this program with the call center, right? The traditional customer support or call center, because they're dealing with email, they're dealing with phone. Typically, not always, but typically they're the lowest educated, the lowest paid people on the team. When you're talking about someone on social who's not only having to retain clients, but also acquire clients for you and do social selling, you are talking about a highly specialized role that involves a lot of empathy, a lot of digital body language, a lot of just prowess in understanding some of those intent signals that we talked about. So these are not interns.
No, they're not.
They are highly skilled, highly educated, and a lot of times highly paid individuals who are doing this for the brand. And if they're not highly paid, they should be.
I totally agree. I'm like, oh, somebody who's running a social team would never give the passwords to an intern who's there for like a hot second and then gone. Like, that sounds like a nightmare. That's how would I want to respond every single time someone says that.
Yeah, I feel like it's like the your mama joke of today, yeah. Right? Like, social intern is like your mama. Like, yeah. Okay.
I forgot which company it was, but it really was an intern did send out like a mass email.
Oh, a mass email.
Yes.
And then it really was the intern, but then people were so
they responded
nice.
So well to it. They were like, oh, I think it was Hulu.
Or was it was one of the media companies. Yeah. Right.
Because it was like, Hulu. What was it, like a blank email?
Yeah, it was something that was just
it
like
it still had like the brackets for like insert.
That's my biggest
something.
Nightmare as someone who sends out communications internally and externally. Like, I felt so bad for them, but it was such a wholesome moment because then all the social leaders and people were like tweeting like their mess ups when they were an intern. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I loved that moment. I think if we could make social more of that kind of place where we give a lot of grace and forgiveness and tell the truth, right? Because social really is a lot of like your best stories, the best chapters of your life. I really appreciate the people who can be real and vulnerable. And I also think the brands who are vulnerable tend to have a more loyal following because like any relationship, right? This is the basic tenet of any relationship. For us to grow and for me to be loyal to you, we both have to be vulnerable at times. And so the brands who are willing to go there, I think do a lot better than the ones who are like buttoned up in corporate jargony.
How do you feel about when things are trending or so? I mean, I guess this is like multiple questions, but so like every June, like companies change their social logos to whatever, but don't actually do anything. Or even like, this is on a less intense scale than that, but like when Barbie was coming out, which was an amazing movie, the strike is over, so I can talk about Barbie. When everyone was doing the like, and he's just Ken, or like this Barbie is a blank, those like memes, how do you feel? Do you think it's smart to jump in on all of those things? Or do you think that everyone, you should think about it a little bit more critically before you jump in on trends or social movements or things like that?
Yeah. Well, two things. I think some of those trends are like fun and innocuous, right? Like I think the ones that like don't have any like political or religious undertones are cool, right? I think though you have to be very careful about social justice. So yeah. I actually wrote about this in the book, but a few of our clients, this is several years ago now because before the book came out, we're like, hey, we want to post about Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that is fantastic. What are you doing within the organization for Black Lives Matter? Oh, we're not, but we just want to like post something in solidarity. And we really pleaded with these brands not to do that because it wasn't about showing solidarity. It was about taking action, right? People mm-hmm. are tired of words. They want to see action. That's really what the Black Lives Matter movement was all about. So some of them listened and some of them didn't. And Naturally. Inevitably, the ones who didn't listen did receive a lot of backlash because people would say, how many, you know, employees at your organization are Black? Or what are you doing to support? What actions are you taking to support Black Lives Matter? And they couldn't answer that in a way that was satisfying for the audience who was asking that question. So I think, you know, when you want to jump out and say something just to say something, I would refrain. If you can jump out and show support of whatever it is, but have something to back it up, that's when you should do it.
Do you have any tips for working with clients that maybe don't take your advice? Not that we've ever experienced that.
No, never.
No one ever experiences that. You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. I am not the smartest person in the room. I feel like I've hired some of the smartest people out there that support me and make me look really smart. But, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. They don't have to take our advice, but they also better be ready when backlash comes for me to be like, well, I told you that was going to happen. So maybe next year we should plan ahead for something like this, you know, and figure out how you're going to form a committee or do donations or whatever it is so that you can do what you want to do, but in the way that we told you to do it.
It's like talking to a toddler sometimes, yeah, probably.
Sometimes, yeah.
Oh, yes. As someone who has a toddler and I do a lot of gentle parenting.
I love that term, gentle parenting.
Gentle parenting. I mean, here's how I would, I guess, address that in like a serious way. Emotions are emotions, right? They're neither wrong or right. If you're in lots of therapy, like I am, right? Everybody's entitled to emotions, your own, their own. And no one, none of us feel the same way. Data is black and white. So if we were able to show them the data that 92% of people had a negative sentiment about this thing and it caused 92% spike in, you know, negative sentiment, they can't argue with that. There's no emotion in that. That just is what is. So let's fix it for next time.
So going back to what we were talking about a little bit with if Delta had just done kind of like a free poll, like, you know, free user experience poll or customer experience poll. What advice do you have for people if they don't have the major following that Delta has to get this global user experience feedback, this customer experience feedback?
Yeah.
How do you kind of get data with a brand new or maybe...
Or when all your customers aren't on social media like a lot of ours.
Yeah. Get on the phone. like, I ask people all the time, when is the last time you've talked to your customers? I always get like crickets, right? We just kind of have like a pause just now. Get on the phone and call them. Or if, you know, if you have an engaged enough, you know, customer audience, then you could do like a Survey Monkey survey or something. But get on the phone and call them. Like, if you don't know what's on your customer's top of mind, if I ask you, what are the top three complaints or concerns or challenges that your customers have had in the past 12 months, and you can't answer me, and you can't answer how soon you've talked to your customers, you're not talking to your customers enough. And I think, obviously, again, going back to that whole customer-centric thing, it doesn't just happen on social. We happen to help companies with their social CX, but a lot of CX happens internally and outside of digital channels as well. So, you know, don't let them operate in silos.
That's so good. That's good for business development people too. I feel like we talk about customer experience a lot, especially with all of the things that are happening in government right now. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's almost like the new buzzword, even though it's like, this is really important. So I like that. I think that's really good advice.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have like your favorite customers, like, see if they'd be willing to jump on like a call like this, right? You're all on video. You're all chatting freely. Obviously, let them know. Other people will be there because, you know, if Brooke speaks up and says something, it may help, you know, somebody else speak up and add to it, right? It's like you never want to be the first person. So maybe even like on that call, like, already have talked to like the best customer, Brooke, and just be like, Brooke. And she says, this is our top challenge, Brooke. When I ask the question, will you be the first to share that on the call? And she'll say, sure. And then when Brooke says it, it makes everybody else feel comfortable that they can say it. The same thing happens on social. A lot of times our best customers, our brand advocates or influencers will come on and be the first to like answer kind of a question. And it just opens it up for other people to feel comfortable and weigh in with their own feeling or opinion.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, that's, you know, I feel like we've been really lucky. Like, Ollie and Rob, they really tried to do that. They're our CEO and founder of Metrostar. Like, they open up the floor, but they think they're vulnerable too. So then it's this,
yeah,
like, you don't feel awkward being like, oh my God, if I say something to my boss, that's going to happen. So just, you know, in any sense, I feel like that's the way to go with the leading with empathy.
Big company, yes. With small company vibes, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Small is the new big all the way around. I mean, that's our mantra going into 2024, small is the new big. Less channels, less emails, less.
Yes.
But more empathy, more heart, more quality.
I totally, I think that one of the big things in my role right now is finding out how we can get rid of things, like get rid of channels. And I literally, a ping just came up on, are we still tweeting? Or I guess it's not tweeting. We're not still tweeting. Are we still using Threads? Like, do we have a strategy for that? Are we getting rid of it? And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I would do the audience work first. Like, find out, do you need to be there? Are there conversations already happening there? Are you getting mentioned there? You know, if you're not, I mean, then what's the point?
Exactly. That's why we got off of Twitter. I mean, there was
a
Twitter's company
a dumpster
of things happening on Twitter at the time,
oh, that
too.
Was a good pun.
But we were like, our audience isn't here. We're not getting engagement, but we're putting in all this like work to get out so many tweets. And it's just like, we're getting one favorite. I'm just like, oh, it's just not worth it. Our people are not here. We do. Right. I think most of our people are on LinkedIn. We've got a lot of LinkedIn warriors in our network.
Same. Or we have a lot of people moving to LinkedIn too. We literally have one client left on Twitter.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything.
It's sad. Cause I mean, growing up,
it was my favorite platform.
I know. Twitter was so fun.
I feel like I didn't even get into that one.
You really had to follow the right. It's less like on TikTok, there's like an algorithm that really, like, really caters to you. So you don't even necessarily have to, as long as you're engaging with things that interest you, the feed is always kind of entertaining. But yeah. Twitter became, you really never knew what you were going to see.
You stopped seeing like all the people you followed and started just seeing like random, weird
things. Yeah. You'd be like, I don't know what. And then you start like back. You're like, why is this on my feed? What did I click? What am I doing?
nothing. You didn't do anything. It's not you. It's me.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Me being Twitter. That's and I still call it Twitter, by the way.
Same. I don't. Well, so, oh my gosh, I don't know. We might have to bleep this out. So Twitter's now x.com or whatever. Uh-huh. And so my husband, every now and then, if he sees a really funny tweet, because the way he uses Twitter, it's just vibes. But sometimes if he sees a really funny tweet, because I'm not on there anymore, he'll send it to me and it comes up on my phone as like x.com. And every single time he sends me a tweet, I'm like, what are you sending me? What NSFW site are you sending to me to? And it throws me off every time. So I feel like Elon should have done a little bit more social. Well,
he's
should have done a lot
not of- one for a lot of like deep thinking and critical planning, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, agreed. Because I don't know. I'm never going to be able to call it X.
No. Nah,
and never. It's always going to look kind of off to me because it's X.com. I don't know. Just that letter of all letters.
Yeah. Well, there's been like a mass exodus from using it. So that's, I mean, back to your guys' point with get rid of things that aren't serving your customer base, aren't you creating these conversations. If no one's there to have the conversation with you, don't put in the effort to have a one-sided conversation.
Yeah, agree. Yeah. I know we're coming up a little bit closer onto time and I want to be cognizant of all the wonderful things you're probably doing throughout your day. But if you could give advice to someone who may be in a situation where they're just now starting their company or somebody's slowly starting to push them in that direction, what's the best advice you can give them on making it work?
If I were just starting B Square today, I would focus on my personal brand first on LinkedIn, right? Because I'm going to have peers there. You should, as a new entrepreneur, be trying to like build your network and connect with those who you already know, right? Before you even start building content, you've got to have people to see that content. So I would focus on my personal brand on LinkedIn and then parlay that once I had some of those conversations and that data and I asked, you know, and did some polling, like where else are you active? Maybe move the brand into a LinkedIn page if that's really the place to be. Or maybe if everybody says Threads, like you were mentioning, I go start a Threads page. So, I mean, I would start really small. Small is the new big. And pick one platform where it makes the most sense for me to be. And then once I have, you know, connection, conversation, maybe conversion happening there, then I can move on to platform number two. Same thing there. Then platform number three. I know that sounds slow, but otherwise, like you were saying, I mean, you're spending so much time, money, and energy on creating content for that nobody's going to see, that no one cares about. So build that customer base instead of a follower base. But I would start with LinkedIn with my personal brand.
I love that. I love personal branding.
I feel like that's nice.
It's so entertaining. Yeah. Or not, well, I mean, it's entertaining to watch, but it's just like, I don't know, you feel like you really get to know people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people connect with people, right?
Yeah.
But we do go, I mean, 76% of people go to social for support to a brand. So, you know, especially if you're like a product brand and you know that like most people are on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok, like it would make sense then to put your brand there or just have, you know, a chat on your e-commerce page or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many ways to do it, but I just don't make a gut decision. Let the data tell you what to do.
I need to be better about that. I'm big into the gut decisions, but I need to use data a little bit more.
That's like with building your personal brand. I'm like, oh, like I know I need to get better about doing that with like LinkedIn and stuff like that. But like my gut's like, oh, like, you know, world just needs to know. But the data is saying like people want to know. People want to get
to know more about you, Liz. You should post more.
Thanks. Me too. I think y'all should both post more on LinkedIn. I mean, mine's a mix of like, it's like business talk, but it's a lot of just advice. Like I'm not like, there's no call to action and a link and I'm asking you to do this thing. I'm just like, hey, here's some free advice. Don't do this.
I love that. I'm going to start offering free advice.
There's some people like we're at Metro Star that pull some great stuff and I'm like, oh, like you're so cool.
I'm like, and then I look at their work schedule and I'm like, how did you have time to write this LinkedIn article? Cause like, are you sleeping? Are you binge watching TV shows like I am? Like, what are you doing?
They're probably multi-screening. It's like TV here, phone scrolling here, also typing out that article.
See, my 2024 goal is to not do that. So
It's bad. But we'll see. There's the joke that goes around. I watch the big TV or the big screen while I'm playing on my little screen to relax from my medium sized screen. Which I'm like, oh, I definitely fall into that.
But even your new year, even your 2024 mantra, small is the new big, right? You're trying to take it down to like one screen. It's the perfect mantra for next year, I'm telling you.
We'll see how it goes, though.
You're putting it out into the universe, though. I feel like that's a good start.
We're going to be checking on you.
Oh, no, that's going to be my LinkedIn article, my first one. I'm going to be like, this is how to use only one screen at a time.
Please check in.
Yes. But where can people find you? Do you have anything upcoming, anything like that, that you want to share? And if you want to pretend that there's a green screen behind you, like a weather person, we can add in your like Twitter, or not Twitter, but like your LinkedIn, things like that.
Oh God, I'm trying to think of something on the spot. This is hard. Like the sunny days are happening over here on LinkedIn. You should definitely follow me there because that's where I'm the most active. But also over here, we have a front coming in from the west called bsquared.media. And that's my website. And you can really find everything there, including that State of Social Care report, which you should definitely read if you don't want stormy weather in your social future.
That was so good. You definitely might have a side gig as being the weather person.
That just made my entire day. That was perfect.
Thanks.
Also, well, thank you so much. It was lovely to learn a little bit more about you. And I feel like I learned so much. I work on social every now. We have another social person at MetroStar who is amazing. But I feel like every now and then I'm in on the socials and I feel like I've got some good nuggets up here now. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy to chat with y'all. So anytime y'all want to chit chat on social, live or not, let me know.
Perfect. Okay. We'll be messaging you. And I'm really excited to read your report. So.
Oh, I'll send it to y'all after.
Perfect.
Oh,
okay. And we'll link it out in the show notes too, so that anybody who's listening can get easy access as well.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.